You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
He has to pay the iron price.
He has to pay the iron price.
I'll never respect you while he lives.
Watch it all come around as I lay on the ground. Joffrey, Cersei, Illyn, Payne, the Hound. They all think I'm lost, but I know where I'm found. I'm the blood and the north when it all comes down. My word is my bond and my bond is my word. Valar Dohaeris, all men must serve. See as the raven flies and time slips by. Valar Morghulis, all men must die.
Hello and welcome again to the Game of Thrones podcast by Bald Move. I am your host, Aaron.
The God of Wine. I'm Jim, the God of Tits.
Oh, I thought that I would get that for a full week. You're claiming
This is a new week, man. This is the premiere week.
Oh, so you hold that Sunday does begin the week?
Yes. As we discussed last time, Sunday does begin the week. Okay.
So we're talking about this is the instant cast, where we just talk for 15, 20 minutes about our initial impressions, and kind of get our heads screwed on straight and kind of get the discussion started for our full cast that comes out on Tuesday evening. This of course is the instant cast for the season premiere of season 4 of Game of Thrones titled Two Swords. What did you think as a season opener?
Of the episode itself, I thought it was really good. I enjoyed some serious ass kicking from Arya and the Hound. That was freaking awesome.
So badass.
Yeah, super badass. I really like the stuff between Sansa and Tyrion. I think that's one of the more interesting developments of last season is, you know, her kind of depression over the death of her mother and her brother. That's starting to get good.
And how Tyrion is just in an impossible position here.
Yeah, he really is. A wedding she didn't want, and now her brother and mother are dead. Not so awesome for the Lannisters.
And I was watching the HBO on HBO 2 for some reason, not HBO Prime. Well, I guess they've got other content to put on there, but HBO 2 has been doing a marathon this whole weekend, and I sat in and watched the last couple hours of it, and You know, Sansa and Tyrion seem to be getting along fairly well towards the end of last season. And then the Red Wedding happened and all that got shit canned down the toilet. So it's kind of tragic. Don't think they had a lot of hope there anyway. But any other thoughts before I start probing you for some things that I'm a little concerned some casual fans might not have gotten?
Yeah, I have a question. Who are the cannibals? Have we seen them before? And if not, what's a little bit of background on them?
Nope, so you know the Wildings are a loose confederation of several different peoples that live up north of the Wall. You know, you've got even giants among them. The Thins are a particular fierce tribe of them that a lot of the other Wildings don't particularly care for. Of course, you know, a lot of Wildings don't care for each other. Again, it's a loose confederation. But you kind of get an idea of what they're all about, eating roast crow. But no, you don't. This is the first time we've actually met them. They might have mentioned it some in season 2 and 3, but I don't think we've ever seen them on camera.
Okay, are we meant to know which crow arm that is?
I don't think so.
It's random crow.
I'm not even sure if it's a crow, because they made mention of, you know, sacking a village down south of the Wall, so that might have just been hyperbole.
Yeah.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
House of the Dragon Season 2 is coming up sooner than you think. And to get us all back in that Leal state of mind, Aaron and I have teamed up with Maester Anthony to bring you coordinated coverage, new and old. For the next 10 weeks leading up to Season 2, Maester Anthony will be releasing an episode of his Season 1 coverage on the Hot D podcast. He originally recorded and released it exclusively on his Double Dragon podcast, so while it's retro coverage, it's almost certainly new to you.
In addition, each Friday, Jim and I will be reading the relevant sections of George Martin's Targaryen history book, Fire and Blood, so that we can compare and contrast it to that week's episode of Hot D Season 1. So grab a copy of Fire and Blood and read along with us if you're so inclined. Just don't read ahead, unless you enjoy spoilers.
If that's not enough to satisfy your craving for fantasy entertainment, well, you're in luck. We recently watched King Arthur, Legend of the Sword, which is Guy Ritchie's uniquely stylish and anachronistic riff on the King Arthur legend. Yes, Guy Ritchie took on the most famous of all English legends and did it with huge ambitions. Sadly, or perhaps thankfully, depending on your tastes, his ambitions were cut short by meager audience interest. Join us for the podcast this Tuesday as we discuss why that might have been and whether this retelling is any good.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
Okay.
Did you get the whole part about what sword they melted down to make the two new swords for the Lannisters?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, I was worried about that because the intro was doing a lot of heavy lifting this time. You know, the like previously seen on, it was trying to stitch together just brief scenes from the whole last three seasons. And yeah. The last few scenes were of Ned using his greatsword to execute the deserter. And then they showed him being executed with it at the end, kind of an insult. And this is one of the latest Lannister insults to the Stark is, Tywin had Ned's ancestral great sword made of Valyrian steel melted down so he could make two weapons for his own house.
Okay, I wasn't sure, because he said that this was the second Valyrian steel sword. I wasn't sure. It was Ned's sword that big that he could make two out of it?
Yeah, it was like as tall as he was, and then it was like as wide as a man's hand.
Jeez,
so that's why okay. Tywin said it was absurdly large, but it was like, you know, a scaled up, you know, North style claymore, basically.
Yeah.
And, but that's, again, there's a reason why I had a hard time going into Feast, because it just seemed like they just were kicking the Starks in the balls over and over and over again.
Yeah. Yeah. So I mean, they are definitely down and pretty much out at this point, except I think maybe for Arya. Who did a lot of ass-kicking this episode.
Let me ask you a couple other things that might have gotten missed by, again, the casual watcher. Did you realize when Jon Snow was kind of on trial for joining the Wildings and making his way back to Knights, did you understand who all the players on the stage were, at least the two primary antagonists?
So the dope on the left, or I guess stage right, no, I didn't know who he was.
So there's two guys. The one guy that claimed he was the commander of the Night's Watch, or the City Watch, that's Janos Slynt, and he's the guy that betrayed Ned Stark, and then Tyrion sent him to the Wall in the beginning of Season 2.
Huh, okay.
He's basically said, you know, you took orders from a boy king to kill this guy, this has started a war, you're a fucking idiot, I'm sending you to the Wall.
Yeah, he seemed like an idiot.
Yeah, he's finally made his way to the Wall, and he's clearly causing trouble up here. The other guy is Alistair Thorne, who was the Master of Arms at the Night's Watch. He's the guy that was the one hating on Jon Snow all the time in Season 1.
Oh, sure. No, I totally remember him.
Okay. I was wondering. Then, of course, everybody knows Maester Aemon, who is the old Targaryen. He's the one that kind of stuck up for Jon.
Yeah, he's not actually in command in that scene, but he takes control.
Yeah, he's didn't really give a shit about Thorne and him being in command. I was going to say, what kind of impression did Prince Oberyn make on you from Dorne?
So, okay, before I answer that, I have a question for you. When he goes out and he stabs one of the Lannisters in the hand, one of the Lannisters who I don't recall seeing, is that someone I should have remembered?
No, he's just some prick Lannister guardsman, which is probably that's probably you know, a necessary addition if I say prick Lannister.
Yeah, redundant.
Yeah, it's a redundant term. But yeah, he was just starting shit. One thing I felt really is missing especially for parts where like the Starks kick ass, which is few and far between, is I feel like the Starks need a really badass theme song. You know, it's like they always play the Reigns of Castamere every fucking time the Lannisters fart at the end of episodes. But, you know, there was a pretty triumphant Stark scene there with Arya killing Polliver with Needle. Something that paid off, you know, something that we've waited two seasons to pay off, and nothing. Just regular old Game of Thrones theme.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe that is the Stark theme, and I'm just slow.
maybe it is, yeah.
I mean, but anyway.
Kind of started off as the people we were rooting for, right? And still are, I think, in a lot of ways. It just gets harder and harder every season as they dwindle in number to keep rooting for them.
It's like we asked, you know, like, who are we rooting for, if not for the Starks? I mean, I guess Dany. She seems to be... Yeah. Before we go to Dany, though.
Okay.
Let's keep it on Oberyn. What did you think of Prince Oberyn?
He is very intimidating, certainly. I don't know that I've seen enough of him yet to form an opinion. Mm-hmm. I've heard a little bit about what kind of character he's supposed to be, but I don't want to necessarily bring that into my commentary right now. Until I see it on screen. So right now for me, he's someone who's intimidating and maybe just a little bit wild, I guess.
Yes. The Dornishmen are kind of have a reputation for being more hot-headed.
Okay,
although,
yeah.
You know, that's saying a lot in Westeros because, you know, it doesn't take much for a bar scene to turn bloody. For people's guts to be underground, but they're considered exceptionally hot-blooded. They're kind of like the I don't know this if this is either racial or racist or stereotype, but they're kind of like got the reputation of like of Spaniards,
okay.
or the lot of the southern Mediterranean folk. Have
yeah,
a quick
you can
temper
kind of see
and,
that as well when like right after he stabs a guy in the hand and they rush out of the room, his. Queen, I guess. I mean, I don't know where he fits into the power structure in the Dornish civilization or the Dornish kingdom, but it seems like she rushes in and starts making out with him like that really got her hot, you know?
Yep.
So that was definitely an indication of what kind of people they are.
And shows that they have like this, you know, open relationship is selling it short. It's like in a wide open barely there type, at least as far as, sexual propriety and,
sure.
Sexual faithfulness, barely there relationship, established nicely in one of Littlefinger's brothels there. I'm trying to think of anything else. You said you've, heard a little bit about his character. Have you been reading spoilers, Jim?
No, I have not. You told me a couple of things about his character that I don't want to necessarily reveal to the audience.
Oh, okay. Okay. Did I say that on the preview cast? Because it might be a little too late to close the door on that.
Yeah, all right. You might have. I don't know.
Anyway, let's move on and talk about somebody we can talk about. We mentioned on the preview cast that the character of Dario Naharis, which is the sellsword lieutenant that has fallen into Dany, has been recast.
Oh, completely recast.
What did you think of him?
I heard his name and I was like, oh, that's the recast. And I was like, I maybe like the actor a little bit better as far as how he portrayed that character and his smoothness, I guess. Cause the old guy was a little bit creepy to me.
Huh.
But I was definitely slightly confused every time I looked at the actor and said, okay, I need to contextualize this with what I saw from last season. It was hard to reconcile those two different actors as the same character.
It's kind of hilarious because you go from it's very jarring. I was watching, you know, episode 310, and Dario's face is one of the last damn things we saw, and his kind of like weird buck tooth, you know, Euro trash kind of looking dude, and then
long
this,
blonde braided hair, yeah.
And then now this guy's got, like, you know, not quite shoulder length, I guess jaw length, dark hair, and he's very, you know, I think he's more conventionally handsome, but I find him, just in the first episode, I find him to be a lot more boring and less magnetic than the other guy.
Oh, really? Okay.
I'm not a lady. I can't judge him on, you know, kind of that, but I feel like, Daario is this larger than life character. You know, he's gambling with the men and he's doing all these crazy things to try to win Danny's favor. And this guy just is a little, I'm worried that he's a little bland, but it's a little bit early to be worrying, I think.
Yeah. Well, the trouble also there is the last actor kind of did all the heavy weight pulling. So he was able to gamble and take all these risks and do all these like fancy gestures. Whereas this guy has already done that in a previous incarnation of his character.
Sure.
So he doesn't get the opportunity to do all those really cool things, right?
Right.
So maybe if they have him do some cool things in the future, we will take a liking to him a little bit more.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I mean, I don't know that Daario left much of a impression on me the first time we saw him in the series, too. Although I think the first time we saw him, he also chopped off his captain's heads and brought him to him. So maybe he did leave a little bit more of an impression.
He did, and he one thinks that like 40 guards are a few. So not
right,
that
right.
either.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if Very Special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd.
FX is adapting James Clavell's best-selling novel, Shogun, into a 10-part miniseries this spring. Set in the shogunate period of Japan at the turn of the 15th century, Shogun depicts the rise of a feudal lord to Shogun, as seen through the eyes of a shipwrecked English sailor. It's loosely based on the real-life exploits of William Adams and Tokugawa Ieyasu.
Shogun has already been successfully adapted back in 1980 with a widely acclaimed miniseries starring Richard Chamberlain, featuring intricate plots, political scheming, complex characters, and thrilling action. This time, husband and wife team Justin Marks and Rachel Kondo try to recapture the successes of the novel and early adaptations while increasing the levels of historical and cultural accuracy that are often perceived as flaws of this and similar works.
Starring Hiroyuki Sanada from The Last Samurai, Mortal Kombat, and John Wick 4, with Cosmo Jarvis of Peaky Blinders, Raised by Wolves, etc., joining the truly massive cast required to bring this complex world to life. Join Aaron and I each week as we deep dive into each episode, uncovering the mysteries, the intrigue, and the glory of Shogun.
Shogun premieres on FX Hulu Tuesday, February 27th, with a two-part debut. Our podcast will release each Thursday thereafter. Get our Shogun coverage by searching for Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
One other thing I'm kind of worried that fans might have missed. Did you get the whole thing with Sir Dantos coming up to Sansa at the end? Did you make, because they, again, this is a part of the heavy lifting from the trailer or the season, the episode opener, but the drunk guy that came up and gave her the necklace?
Oh, yeah, no, I totally called that he was the fool that she saved.
Okay, good, because that... I'm wagering that very few people would have gotten that if not for the pretty remarkable, 2 minute, last three seasons on Game of Thrones that they cobbled together. Cause we haven't seen him since the opener of season two.
Yeah. I just did a rewatch, so I've seen him within the last week.
Right on, right on. So, okay. So yeah, he was the fool that was at the King's Day, King's birthday tournament. And he showed up to the list drunk, and Joffrey was going to basically kill him by drowning him in wine. And Sansa reminded him that it's bad luck to kill someone on your birthday and made him a fool instead. So, what do you think of him coming back after two seasons?
It depends on where they go with that. right? I mean, right now it's pretty innocuous. It's just him coming back to, I guess, thank Sansa for saving his life, making him the mm-hmm. fool.
Mm-hmm.
So at this point, I don't think much of it. But I'm sure that's going somewhere. They don't ever do anything in Game of Thrones that isn't leading to something interesting.
Yeah, I thought it was super effective and interesting the way they segued from Jaime and Brienne talking about Sansa's safety at King's Landing to this almost, you know, Sam Raimi-style slasher flick filming of her being stalked through the King's Landing's meager Godswood. I thought that was pretty cool because it's like, oh, shit, maybe she's going to be assassinated right here.
Yeah, speaking of Jaime, I was super happy to see that golden hand. I was really hoping he would get a golden hand.
Well, it's pretty easy to entertain Jim here.
Oddly specific, but I really wanted that to happen.
Well, I mean, it makes sense, right? He's a Lannister.
Sure, sure.
And that's something that's straight out of the book. I quite enjoyed him. He's the only Lannister child. Excuse me. He's the only Lannister child that has straight up defied his father to his face.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And he earned that little swagger as he walked out of the the Hand's audience chamber. What did you make of his little showdown with his son, Joffrey?
I don't know. Nah, it seems like Joffrey thinks that he's in control of everything, when we actually know that Tywin is, and Jaime standing up to Tywin before that seems like he's willing to stand up to Joffrey as well. So I don't, unless he has his other hand cut off, I don't think Jaime views Joffrey as much of a threat.
It's interesting, because he knows that Joffrey is his son. Joffrey doesn't know that he's his father, and I thought that was very well played. That kind of undercurrent.
Sure.
And I also just think it's fascinating how Joffrey's got this little cult of personality going. It's almost Stalin-esque, where he's just rewriting history in the way he wants it to be. And I do you think he believes this bullshit?
What bullshit specifically?
The fact that he saved King's Landing, he repelled Stannis at the Battle of the Blackwater, he's feeding the people. I mean, I don't know how far his delusion goes, which I think is what makes him kind of fascinating. Does he know deep down that he's a bullshitter?
He's got to, right? I mean, what we saw at the end of season three, or all throughout season three, really, was him kind of trying to get over the fact that he didn't have any part in that, right? That he cowarded his way out of that and let his mother call him back to the keep.
Right.
I feel like a lot of season three was him getting over that fact, trying to live that down. So at this point, I feel like he still knows it, but maybe he's just going to pretend like he did all the work, and then people are obviously going to fall into line. And I don't know that that's the role that Jaime is going to take.
Well, it's interesting because the other Ser Meron Trant, I believe, was the other Kingsguard, and it seems like all of his inner circle that's not Tywin is all too ready to just carry his water for him. You know, they're not going to say anything different. So, all in all, I thought it was a very satisfying, season premiere. Had a lot of action moments, a lot of character moments. It ended on a really kind of crowning moment of badass for Arya and the Hound.
Yeah.
And the last scene where they pan up and they did a show how devastated the countryside is by these Lannister guys going around and just sacking towns and you know, wringing every little village and croft for all the gold and crops and everything. And you just think about it did a really good job of showing how bad the small folk must be suffering, especially when you keep in mind this is, you know, this is autumn right before winter. And what the hell these people are going to do when the Stark's family words finally come true and winter comes. Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else you got to say?
Yeah, one more thing. Holy shit, dragons. Oh my god, those dragons are getting huge.
Yeah, and unruly too.
They're fighting, yeah, in midair.
Well, I mean, the big one, Drogon, snapped at Dany, which took me aback. I'm like, how the hell are you going to control these in battle or ride them if you can't, like, break up a scrap between the two of them?
Interesting, yeah.
Yeah, I don't, I don't have a good handle on how these dragons work, honestly. You know, Jorah says they can't be tamed. Do dragons just like to fuck shit up? And so if a human wants to ride him and steer him in the direction of fucking up the most shit, they kind of go along with it? Or is he kind of overselling how untamable they are? Is Dany doing a bad job of raising them? There's so many questions in my mind.
Interesting.
Is she a shitty dragon mother?
Maybe so. I don't know. The other thing, what is up with her following the trail of corpses to wherever she's going?
So I don't know if you noticed on the map, there's two new locations, the Dreadfort, which we kind of are interested in, or we've seen last season anyway, and Dany's been making her way up the three great slave cities of the Gulf of Grief, and we saw her sack, you know, Astapor and Yunkai. And then she's up to Meereen, which is the greatest. It's like the capital slave city, the biggest and baddest.
Okay. Holy crap, because there were 200,000 in Yunkai?
Yeah, I don't know the exact numbers, but it's a big walled city, similar to like Karth and its kind of greatness and how hard it would be to conquer. And I like the scene where she's wondering if they're going to be afraid of her, and they basically rolled out the red carpet, literally. That was a hell of a scene. Children's corpses tied with their fingers pointing the way, like, come on, if you want us, come and get us. Like, no, this isn't they're afraid of her at all.
Maybe even slightly more disturbing than when Theon found those two hanging children's corpses that were burnt to a cinder in Winterfell.
Yeah, there lot of good corpse work this episode.
Corpse work, nice.
Yeah, a lot of good corpsemanship. That's kind of all I got to talk about. We'll have plenty more on Tuesday night. You got anything? Any last words, Jim?
No. Sorry about my voice.
Before I have you executed. That sounded kind of ominous.
Yeah, please. I feel like my throat's about to execute me, so.
Yeah, I apologize. We're going to be a little late tonight, and we're not sounding great because, number one, Jim's throat's bad. Number two, we're doing a remote cast. Jim had a trip to the West Coast to make, and you spilled some shit on your laptop moments before we started casting, so we had to cobble together an emergency casting solution.
But I apologize. Bad news.
We usually have it out within an hour. It's going to be probably close, more past hour and a half, 2 hours tonight. But we will have it out. We'll be a little bit more timely next week. And we should have all the stuff worked out for the Tuesday cast. If you'd like to give us feedback, send it in to gameofthrones@baldmove.com. Of course, you can always follow us at follow what we're doing at baldmove.com or check us out on facebook.com/baldmove or on Twitter @baldmove. Yeah, so get your feedback in, and we will see you in 2 days. Until then, I'm your host, Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
Good night.